Welcome to A Fireside Chat. I'm your host, Mark Otto, and I'm joined today by a very special guest, a friend of mine for over 30 years, Bryce. He and I have been accused of sharing a brain, and we have worked together, we've traveled together, we've been longtime friends, and today we're just going to have some fun. So we're going to talk today about several things, probably nothing that amounts to a whole lot, but our goal is to have a show that kind of takes two different sides, talks about the product or the subject or history or whatever it is. And today it's going to be movies and Saturday Night Live. So, Bryce, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
We are going to have some fun today. This is fun. We're going to talk today. Kicking it off, we're going to go right into old classic movies. And I think you and I both share the same affinity for Caddyshack, Tommy Boy, Animal House, Home Alone, Great Outdoors, you know, obviously Farley, Candy, Aykroyd, everybody, you know, the list goes on and on and on. David Spade. Give me your list. What's your top ones?
Well, I mean, the scary part about calling them old movies, that's the first thing that strikes me is it's tough to swallow. I don't even think of them as old anymore, but I don't think anyone
That's the challenge, and I feel the exact same way, and where I hesitate is you and I both have kids that are, well, you have older kids than I do, but we both have kids that are in their 20s and older. These guys don't remember some of these actors.
Oh, they don't even know. They don't even know John Hughes movies, and that's like our core, our growing up period.
Who's John Hughes? No.
Yeah. exactly.
So what's your top list?
I mean, the classics. You're anything with John Candy, anything with anything with a story that had nothing to do with the reason for making the movie. It was a reason to get that group of people together because they were great interacting.
It's interesting. You know, it's amazing to me how many of what I consider the classic comedies came from characters on SNL.
Yeah.
The last I knew, and it could be more than that now, but I believe there have been 11 movies made with characters from SNL.
Someone did some Googling.
Which, to quote the great Tina Fey, that means there's 22 thumbs down. But it really is amazing. And I guess the reason I find this fun and I wanted to talk about it today is we're coming up on the 50th year of SNL.
Oh, really? I watched it.
Thanks for joining us today, folks. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I watched it when I was younger, and I think I've caught a couple of them here and there. But the problem is the only thing that they're doing today is creating these YouTube short versions of everything. It isn't even an ongoing character. They just want to create.
Well, there's some of it. I mean, like, you know, Kenan. You know, I would debate that. And I guess this is the fun part of this show, is both sides. I feel like SNL is always going to be the best during the time that you were in high school. And I've heard many people say this. It isn't like just something I thought. So when you go back, and it was actually, Lorne Michaels said this once in an interview. If you go back and you have somebody say, oh, this was the best cast, or this was the best period, or this was the best group, he said his first question is, what year did you graduate high school? He said,
so he knows what
always
it was
when they were in high school or that early college. And he said, he put it this way, and I love this analogy. He said, all babies are ugly except for yours. So he said, when you first get a cast, he actually has the people at NBC say, you know, I'm not sure if this is working. And he's like, I know, it'll come around. And they're like, oh, you know. And he says, yeah, I know. But, and they're like, well, he doesn't seem funny. He is funny. It's got to come around. He said, it's kind of like a baby. All babies are ugly, but then you get about 6 months in, and all of a sudden everybody thinks they're adorable. It's the same thing with a cast member. A new cast member comes in, and he said it takes them a while for the audience to get to know them, to accept them.
Sure.
So it's really cool that there is that culture.
He can't go wrong. You can pick anybody, and eventually they'll.
Well, I think there is a method to his madness. And if you look back, I mean, it's amazing what has come out of his 30 Rock. I mean, he has created, I would credit him with, you know, 80% of comedy. I mean, if you can trace back every big name you know to SNL. Every one of the movies that we named on our list was a spinoff of SNL.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Even just back to Caddyshack, I mean, shoot.
Yeah.
Bill Murray, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I can't, and Chevy.
Yeah.
So, it's always fun to me to kind of take that trip down that, because I look at it like, you know, there's times when I've been enamored with it. There's times when I'm not as, you know, excited. But yeah. Overall, I really respect the franchise. I mean, it's pretty amazing what they've done. When you think about 50 years with the same set, the same format, the same producer, with the exception of 5 years that he wasn't there. So he was there for five, and then he was gone for five, and then he came back. But what he has done, I mean, to me, he's the godfather of comedy.
Well, it's the competition, isn't it? Where you don't just get up because you're on the show, you get to be, or I should say, because you're part of the cast doesn't mean you get to be on the show.
Oh, no, there's writers, there's cast members, and then there's feature players. So, no, it's kind of funny. So, and I think, and I don't like mentioning companies or anything, but you remember one of the places that I worked that was really intense. And yeah. You basically walked around all the time, you know, with your heart in your throat, like, oh my gosh, I'm getting fired today.
That was just
everyone I've ever talked to said that SNL is like that. SNL is literally like you walk the halls thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get fired. And then, you know, somehow you get called back the next year. So it's very much a really intense environment, but yet it's like this fraternity. So there is an absolute method to the madness, which is really amazing and impressive. And then I just think it's really cool that, you know, everything, if you go back and look at a rerun from 1976 or 75, the first year, it still has those core values.
Well,
and I think that's kind of cool.
No, I, without question, I think you could turn any episode on and find something humorous. You know, where they differ is that it's so today, it's all current, if you will.
Well, it's current, and you have to be a little more careful. So even some of the previous cast members have said you couldn't even do some of the skits that we did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in the same token, I think that's also a sign of the times, because I think you could say that about every group. So if you looked at the original cast in 75, they probably couldn't do things that people did in 80. The people in 1980 did things that you couldn't do in 1985.
Yeah.
So I think some of that's just the evolution of, you know, where we're at and what's going on. So, you know, one of the things, another thing that's come off of this show was obviously the awards. So I did a little research. There was
Everybody gets an award today.
Isn't it amazing? There were seven award shows this week. I mean, everything from catering to groundskeeping somehow has an award show with a banquet, which is almost, in our world, you know, in our day life, it's almost reminiscent of trade shows.
How do you get a
you'd be hard-pressed to find. I've always been curious what the most obscure trade show is.
Well, I would just
there was the Adult Film Awards in Vegas one year.
There was a what?
One year when I was in Vegas for a hardware show, there was Adult Film Awards going on in that in the convention center, the one that's attached to the Hilton there.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious.
Oh, I can't imagine it wouldn't be.
Well, the best part is when you have a woman standing up there accepting award, thanking the staff and her husband.
And by staff, you mean the people who work there? Or
I didn't ask. You know, it was kind of one of those we don't. That was when I left and went back to the show I was there for. I was like, oh,
you walked to the wrong booth. You walked to the wrong.
Yeah. Went to. Well, they had left the doors open and they were given awards. And of course, you know, much like watching a truck go over a cliff, you had to watch. So it was disturbing and hilarious all at the same time. But I mean, with the awards, doesn't it seem like every single, I mean, there isn't somebody that doesn't get an award.
Well, it's self-congratulatory, you know, look how great we are.
Here's which I guess rolls over to social media, which is kind of on the heels of this. I'm curious, and I think I know what your stance will be, but I'd like to hear it.
I'm guessing you do already.
Yeah. What are the goods and the bads with social media? I mean, you know, I know it's very cliche to even ask that, but, you know, you think back, and it's like, what has it done to Hollywood? I mean, are stars really stars today like they used to be? Like, you know, it used to be, you know, you think about it, like Clark Gable and even like Jackie Gleason and Marilyn Monroe, Ava Gardner, you would see them in media a few times a year getting out of a limousine. And I mean a real limousine, not a pickup truck that's been stretched or a Tesla that's turned into a limousine. I mean like a Rolls Royce limousine. They're wearing a tuxedo. And they're going into an award ceremony or a premiere. Versus today, where you see, you know, very famous actors and actresses standing in line at Starbucks in what they obviously slept in.
Yes.
What's it done to us? Is it just, you know, pulled back the curtain and exposed our stupidity?
God forbid that people look at stars as anything other than common people, but it just makes them within reach, if you will.
So you feel like it's positive. You think it's better?
No. Because, you know I give two craps about it.
That's what I'm trying to pull out of you.
Yeah, no, and I look at it this way. I look at it like it shouldn't be where someone feels they can reach out and talk to, name the person of interest here, and actually get to them. You know, just you should write a fan letter or whatever. You know, whatever crazy person would write a letter of love and respect to somebody they've never met other than watching on a TV screen or a movie screen. And that letter might get to their assistant. It's probably not going to happen. And then they get maybe a form letter back with a stamped signature. And they keep it for their whole life because they feel like they touched
the give it to their grandkids that take it to a, Pawn Stars episode, only to find out it was signed by the secretary.
Yeah. But it meant something to them, and it had value to that person, which I guess, in the scheme of things, was sweet, right? There's
sure.
There's your only glimpse into a my cold dead heart. Today you can text somebody or tweet them or whatever the other versions of that are, and it actually shows up on the phone. They're standing, they're holding,
and they while they're standing in line at Starbucks in their sweats. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Which I don't think it ought to be that way. I don't think you ought to be able to do that with anybody. I mean,
it's very accessible, which I agree. It's a double-edged sword. It's good and bad. You know, for people like me that host shows, it's absolutely great because, garden variety rube like myself can reach out to people and they'll respond and agree to come on as a guest.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, though, for the movie star appeal, it takes a little of a luster.
Yeah, there has to be a separation of some sort of scarcity.
Yeah,
and that's
they're
gone.
Supposed to be better. And it is. Well, it's interesting because it's also the other thing is it's dumbed it down. I mean, can you imagine seeing Clark Gable doing the ice bucket challenge? You know, I mean, you just can't picture because. Every time you saw him, he was absolutely, class.
Yeah, I'm sure if you search for that, someone will create that with AI today.
I'm sure it's already been done. In fact, by us saying that, it created an algorithm, and now it's in the works.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Have you seen all those versions of AI that they're redoing all these old movies, like Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark? Yeah.
How do you think I created the Parker for President with my dog?
Yeah, which, again, I don't know how you have this much free time.
Well, actually, ironically, and this is the beauty of using technology, it really didn't take any time. That's the beauty of this. For good or bad, you can literally create that in seconds. Even pretty much. You can voice speak it into your phone, and it'll create it. And for those who are trying to catch up, I have a little white dog who's the epitome of sarcasm. He is on Instagram as Parker's One View, and he's decided to throw his hat in the ring and run for president, which, as I've put it, he's got just as verifiable of military service as every other candidate, tongue-in-cheek, and he's better looking than either candidate. So, vote who you want for. We don't get into that here, but at least now you have a third option.
Fourth.
Fourth, that's true.
Yeah,
that's right.
Still running.
You know, and I felt guilty taking a little away from Alice because I have a lot of respect for him. Slash ever ran for president, I would throw Parker behind him as a VP because we absolutely love Slash.
I'm sure you'll see that in some AI version.
He's way too smart. You ever notice that he's one of the few guys that never gets sucked into anything? One thing, he does it very well, and he does it every day, and that is absolutely shred a Gibson guitar. He does things with it that no other human being has ever done, and probably ever will. I mean, he plays a Les Paul better than Les Paul did. But what I have a lot of respect for him about is that he never gets sucked into anything controversial. Politics, he's one of the few guys I've seen that recognize people came here to see me play. They didn't come here for my political views. They didn't come here to hear me talk about, I want to save the wayward, penguin in Antarctica. They came here to see me play the guitar.
And probably the songs that they know.
Exactly.
Not the new crap that doesn't really...
No, and I have, as you know, I have several friends that are in the industry, and I'm not going to name drop, but I mean, one of the things that's funny is that's the part that is hard, I think, for an artist, is they'll have new music that they're really proud of, that they worked really hard on. And it's like, you bust your tail, you want to show the public this, and they're just standing there going, okay, yeah, play the song.
Well,
that one from 1986 that we know you for.
Stand for me, monkey.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And that's got to be the hardest thing. It's like, yes, you have this audience, and it has created an amazing life for you.
Yeah.
But at the same token, you are, you know, you can't get out of it. You're Leave It to Beaver for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you wrote it. You wrote that 30 years ago, and to be fair, you've wrote a few things since. I heard a story once, and I believe it was Sting. Imagine that. He's playing a concert, and it's all new stuff up front. And he's playing what nobody knows. No one's really into it, but they're listening because it's Sting, or probably somebody.
They're tolerating it.
Yeah, they're tolerating it. If it's not him, maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe it's somebody else, but it's that version of person. And it's like dead quiet. And someone in the back yells, "How about playing one for us?"
That's literally it. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And that's got to be the toughest part of that, is you become known for this.
For walking in the sun? Or what's that
double-edged
song?
Sword. It's like it's great that it gave you this life. It brought you to this point, put you on the floor. But, you know, now that's, you feel like you're stuck with that.
Well, that's why Smash Mouth has a gig at every country fair.
So that kind of takes this full circle. You know, you see these people, you know, as you said, they're so accessible. You know, it just seems so strange compared to what we grew up with. And what do you think it's doing to Hollywood? You think we still have that star factor, or has it become, I mean, it's almost like it's funny, you know, and I know you go there as well, but like if you're driving through West Hollywood or Burbank, and it's kind of like, you know, you almost hesitate using the word star because there's YouTube star, there's TikTok star, there's Instagram star, and they're on billboards. I mean, this is like a real thing. I mean, these people have millions of followers. They're earning millions of dollars a year creating content. And I do have a lot of respect for it because I do realize there is a craft there. It's definitely a skill. And it's, you know, it's almost like in the good and the bad.
You're giving them a lot of credit.
Well, that's the other side of the coin. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, and hear me out on it, let's say you're a young comic. Or a young musician.
All right.
Go back to like early 80s, mid 80s, if you were a young comic, young musician, you pretty much had to move to New York, go to the improv, do sets, live in a hovel, probably come as close to starvation as you ever will in your life, and hope somebody sees you. Now, they have this platform where they can put their material out, and whether or not the manager at the improv or the manager at, you know, any big club, you know, down Sunset, you know, gives them a chance, they're getting exposed. And people are reaching out to them with record deals and with movie deals. And, you know, that's where some of the cast members have come from. You know, it's like, it's kind of crazy. So the good side is I do feel like it gives every artist an opportunity. It gives you this platform to be exposed without someone else filtering. So the manager at the improv doesn't like the way you look, or he doesn't like your comedy. You're not getting on. Well, this surpasses that. And if you start to get enough of a following, he's going to put you on because he can't not. Same thing in music. If you start to get enough of a following, you're going to start having appearances. People are going to start seeking you out. So the very same, and I know I'm talking out both sides of my mouth, but in the very same sense of, you know, what's a star today with compared to like Clark Gable, Ava Gardner, Frank, you know, imagine having Instagram and TikTok today if Frank was still alive. You know, I mean, and then, you know, at the same time, it does give these people a platform. So what are your thoughts?
I got to say, it's the first time I've thought that it's good. let me digest that for a second.
Who would have thought the Mojave Desert had positive properties?
Yeah. I would say you're right in the fact that it used to be very, very few outlets where people could become popular, successful, however you're going to word it. You know, if you made it on The Tonight Show or Letterman, everyone knew your name the next day. That's a common statement.
But you had to make it on. I mean, back then, if you didn't get on The Tonight Show, you didn't get on anything else, really. Johnny was the gatekeeper.
Yeah, you never got a TV show. You never got a second pass anywhere.
No, as Seinfeld put it, I think this sums it up. He said, you know, somebody asked him, they said, well, what were you thinking? And he said, I'm thinking they pull the curtain back and the next 30 seconds decides the rest of my life.
Yeah, but today, every 30 seconds that people put online.
You could bomb today and put out something great tomorrow, and it takes off. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I don't know if you've seen this guy, Nikki Cass. And I don't mind plugging him because he's absolutely hilarious. Nikki Cass is a young guy, and he does one-man skits. He's every character. He does them on Instagram and TikTok. And it's absolutely hilarious. It's all about an Italian dad, sports. He creates players, and the other players on the football field are leaf bags. He's a baseball coach, and he's standing there screaming at no one. And then it'll cut to him playing the neighbor, absolutely stunned at the neighbor's kid running around the backyard screaming at no one. So, I mean, you take a guy like that, if he walked into any comedy, you know, club 20 years ago and said, this is what I want to do, they would have just stared at him blinking.
Yeah.
But today, he has a platform.
And he doesn't have to have 10 million people watching him. He has to have a handful of
500,000
people.
Yeah.
Yeah. A handful of people who are loyal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, less than a million, and maybe he can, you know, eke by as far as a career or a paycheck. And if he doubles that, it's real money. Where before it had to be millions.
Well, before you had to get some sort of a special or picked up somewhere, because if you were running comedy club to comedy club, you're making 60 to 100 bucks a night half the time. And you hear these horror stories over and over and over again. They don't even get paid.
Yeah.
You know, they're spending almost what they're making in gas. You know, they're staying in absolute hovels. I mean, it was a completely different life. Whereas, you know, here's a guy that's doing an entire set, creating a franchise almost from his parents' backyard.
Well, but that's, you said a double-edged sword. It's true. Now, there is no barrier to entry. I guess technically talent rises, right?
Exactly. That.
But that's not absolutely true either. I mean, let's say it is, but it can't possibly be true if that was the case.
You have to have a certain work ethic. You have to have a certain technical ability. You know, because that's the other thing, too. You could have the talent, and if you don't have the discipline to be creating content, putting it up, managing it, promoting it, it's not going to go anywhere. So there's definitely an art to guiding the process.
And the luck to find some way of catching the algorithm just right.
So on the right day, and the right gap. You know, maybe 5 years ago that would have went nowhere. But today it caught people's eye. And, you know, I think a lot of that was also born out of the COVID era where people were absolute boredom. And they're at home, and they have nothing else to do, so they start putting things online. and all of a sudden they start realizing, I get quite a bit of feedback. I'm actually getting more feedback than I was when I was doing clubs. Right. So now you've got some of these young comics that are actually putting things, they're actually creating channels where that's all they're doing.
And the clubs, some of them died during COVID. They couldn't maintain.
A lot of them did die. And, you know, it does make you wonder what the future holds. You know, is this going to be the end of the clubs because it is going to more of an online? Or are the clubs going to go full circle? So you remember back, you know, even before us, like 70s, probably 60s, the clubs weren't just comedy. They would have music. They'd have a couple of solo acts. And sure. Then they'd have a comic that would open and close. And, you know, it was kind of like a small variety show.
Yeah, different nights for different themes.
Yeah, different nights for different things. And, you know, it was definitely more of not so dedicated. And it was funny because, you know, I saw that in one of the comedy clubs in New York. You walk through and you know how they have pictures on the wall.
Yeah.
Then you start seeing old pictures of like music. And I asked somebody, I'm like, what was this? And they're like, oh, years ago we used to have, you know, a lot of acts come in and they would play. And it's like, obviously I didn't. So
did you take that?
You wonder if it's going to come full circle.
Did you take that free ticket from Grover in Times Square to get to that club?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same guy that sold me the fake Rolex gave me that.
That's awesome. I got a CD from him. It was signed.
In a Louis bag that Louis spelled wrong.
It starts with a J, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's silent. Oh.
So that brings us up now. We're going to completely shift gears because I think it would be fun to talk about another subject. Is
all right.
What was the most horrible job you ever had? Not counting the one you currently have. And you don't have to mention companies, just in generality.
Current day or
yeah.
Current week?
Yeah, if you want to talk about yesterday afternoon, that's fine.
Yeah, yesterday afternoon was pretty good. I mean,
you have to have something way back that was just, and you look back at it now, and it could literally be a Saturday Night Live skit. So it does kind of tie into what we're talking about. I'm kind of thinking of anything along the lines, and if you want, I'll lead off because I know I caught you stone cold. But, so when I was in high school, I get a job with an excavating company. And it was one of my very first jobs, other than working, you know, at home on the farm.
So literally digging ditches?
Digging ditches. And let's just say the owner of the company enjoyed his libations a little bit more than he should. Or I'm not going to judge, but, you know, if you're starting off the day with a, you know, cocktail, it's probably going to be a long day. Long story short, he was notorious for, let's just say, surprising you at any given time. So one day he comes barreling in the driveway, and my job as a kid was just to do every crap job there was. Wash equipment, clean out trucks. I'm the gopher, the grunt.
Yeah.
He comes rolling in. Hey, we got to go into town. You know, so-and-so's horse died. Okay. So he loads up the backhoe on the truck, drive in. I'm just riding along with him thinking that I'm just going to be kind of helping out or, I don't know, standing there for moral support. This is like right out of Saturday Night Live. We pull in the driveway. Here's the horse covered up by a tarp. Mom, dad, and the daughter standing next to it, tearing up a box of Kleenex, sobbing because they've just lost a member of the family. And I am with Stan Laurel. And he rolls the backhoe off, starts digging. All of a sudden, his beeper goes off, and he's a volunteer fireman, and he has to run into town. So he's like, here, finish this up. So I don't know how to operate this, number one. Number two, I'm like 16 years old. I am trying to be respectful of these people because you can tell they just lost like their most beloved family. So I'm like carefully digging a hole. It's going slow. All of a sudden, here he comes back. comes rolling in their driveway on two wheels. We got to go. There's a water main break in town. I am not exaggerating one bit. He takes two huge scoops of dirt, flings it to one side, reaches over with a backhoe, swipes the horse into the hole, tarp and all. It's at this point we realize the hole isn't quite big. He proceeds to take the backhoe and whack it a few times to try and make it fit in the hole.
Tap it in.
Still not going to fit. Slings some dirt on it, folds everything up, and I swear, like something out of the Dukes of Hazzard, it felt like one motion that he loaded this thing on. I take it back. He didn't. The one motion was he folds everything up, hollers at me out the window to grab his truck and follow him, and he drives out the driveway, leaving the dump truck there, leaving the trailer there, and the people at this point that have stopped crying because they're in shock. And they're standing there blinking. And I'm left to tell them, you know, I'm very sorry about your loss. We'll be in touch. And I don't
want to grab.
True story.
I got nothing. I mean, I got nothing.
I'm almost positive part of the horse was sticking out of the ground over the left.
It was disturbing. I didn't think you actually buried horses. I thought the only thing you buried was its head. I thought you sold the rest of it.
That's only in the mob movies. The mob movies, they do that. The rest of it, yeah.
No, in real life.
Actually, you know, in real life, what they do in a lot
Sagittarius.
Of cases now is they cremate.
Not Sagittarius. What's the horse's name?
Well, one of the things I've heard they do is they bury the head and the hooves, and they cremate the rest or whatever. But with the really famous horses, they cremate them a lot now. And then the other thing they do is, like with Man of War, they buried him complete. Like they had a coffin made the size of a piano chest. So it's funny that when you look back at some of these jobs you had, like you can't even imagine. So, you know, I go from there to a grocery store, and it's not too hard to imagine how we end up here, because even back then, it's funny how the sarcasm and the condescension serve you well for something like this, but it's a little daunting when you're working in the public. I would get called on the carpet.
We only flourished in one company together as a result of that.
And it was because the owner was more deranged than us.
You should never see the owner of your company with his shirt off and a young lady dancing in front of him.
I had him come and get me one time. We were on the road, and he came to my hotel room, not wearing pants, but still had his dress shirt on. And said, "I think we're going to leave early." And I'm thinking, like this? And he's like, "I'll meet you down in the lobby in 5 minutes." I'm like, okay. No, there was nothing that would surprise me about that place.
No, standing up behind the desk without pants on.
Yeah, no pants. Yeah, and it wasn't for the reason, you know, I've heard the stories, like some of the great conductors and performers would take their pants off in the green room and hang them over a chair so that they didn't crease them.
Yeah, no,
I don't think that was the reason.
No, I think that's where he forgot where they were.
He forgot, or it was convenience during an interview process. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was funny when you look back, because like, I went from that excavator thing to a grocery store, and I used to get yelled at by the manager. And of course, the manager, you know, you're a kid. He seemed like he was like 50. He was probably 28. But I remember he would haul me in all the time because he was one of these guys that takes it very serious. And I'm one of these people that was like, you know what I'm like. So, I mean, I'm sitting there and like a customer would ask you a question, you know, "So is the salmon fresh here?" And I'm like, "Well, we're in Michigan, and I don't think there's any salmon that are native. You know, I don't know."
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I have a yeah. rule. They don't eat me, I don't eat them. And they're like, Mark, office. Office. Okay.
Yeah, no, I you know my rule about seafood.
You my favorite thing to do, which I, my favorite thing to do was to send people to the opposite end of the store. You know, excuse sure. me, sir, can you tell me what aisle the paper towels are in? I think it's with the oh, soup on aisle two.
Way over there.
Way over there.
And they, your goal is they'll find somebody else who can help them in that end of the store.
And you'll be out of that aisle before they come back.
Yeah, yeah, you're just heading to the restroom anyway.
I think my high watermark there was telling one of the other workers for an ongoing period that I had a twin brother that also worked there. So I would mess with a worker, and he would see me both in the back screwing off, which I think goes to any comic mind, and up in the front. Every time he'd see me, he'd be like, aren't you supposed to be up front? No, my brother works here too, and he works in the front, and I work back here. And that went on for a long time, and finally a friend of mine's like, you know, he actually thinks there's two of them.
Well, I'm struggling looking at some of the different jobs I've had, and I think the only one I really hated was drywall. And that was just because I was terrible at it. It was far away. It was early in the morning. You know, the classic, don't want to do this, but I was young and I needed the money.
You probably didn't drink enough, because every drywaller I've ever met drinks a lot.
It probably would have helped, because it was a brutal job. And, you know, I was the youngest guy in the truck. And to your point earlier, I was the one that got handed all the crap jobs. You know, I had to bring the drywall in the room, you know, from the truck. So I had to lift the two sheets taped together to take it in. And, then they would just hang it, but it was just an awful, awful, brutal, hard labor job. You know, if we were lucky, we went out to breakfast afterwards. That was the high point of the day.
Well, you have to admit, the place where we worked together, that had some moments.
Which one?
Well, that's true. Are you allergic to
one? You forgot about the second one.
Oh, my gosh. And that was actually a better one. So for our listeners, I'm joined by a very good friend of mine, Bryce. This is a Fireside Chat. And we were talking about comedy SNL, which actually spun into anybody with a comic mind probably didn't do well early on. And here we are talking about our early jobs and instances. Bryce and I actually worked together at a couple of places, and the one was epic because the owner was colorful, to say the least.
Yeah, that's the word, colorful. We could use quirky, too, if you like.
I think the trip to his house was the coup de grace. Because it felt like every room was going through some sort of a portal into another dimension. I've never seen a house that had more phases to it. Everything from a tropical jungle in the back. I'm not making this up, folks. It had more plants and vines growing up a two-story atrium.
It had its own climate.
It did have its own climate. Birds, bugs, you name it.
Yep.
I'm not sure what else lived out there, and I didn't want to hang around to find out.
I'm not sure
there had to be
animals.
A couple reptiles. You know, to the living room that would have made Morticia Adams jealous.
It was Adam's family.
It was,
well, he collected
Adam's
that
family.
Weird furniture. I mean, he would pay $30,000 for an armoire that looked like it was worth $50.
Yes.
But it was worth
the
crazy money that he and he looked at that as an investment.
Well, and somebody somewhere told him that this was worth $30,000.
Yeah, exactly.
When they had just bought it at a barn sale down the road for $50. There's a reason it looked like it was worth $50. That's what he paid for it.
Well, he had something to tie the goat to.
Well, you you know, when you think about the, you know, I remember taking the trip, and you could tell it better, you know, asking what allergies we had before we got this vehicle.
Yeah, yeah. Are you allergic?
And I remember us looking at each other like, is this really going to be?
Is this where we're going to die?
What's in the van?
I don't, nothing would shock me. If you open up the van, there's literally nothing that could be in there that would surprise
me. No, if there was a monkey in a car seat, wouldn't have even fazed me.
And the monkey has
a monkey
and would talk. It would
a monkey in a car seat wearing a ball cap thinking he's going to a baseball game would not have shocked me one bit.
Asking if he can drive.
Yeah. Or suggesting that he drives so that the rest of us could talk.
It wouldn't. The bizarre nature of his life and his what looked like a strung out drug addict wife. And the
you'd
fact
have
that
to
he would disappear for
so
a month
fashion.
At a time. Yeah,
I mean, you think about what she went through.
Well,
that poor woman.
She doesn't want to remember, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm sure that was a coping mechanism. I don't think there's anything about that that was self-destructive. I think that was self-preservation.
Yeah.
And then the stark contrast was his father.
I was just going to say, and the disdain that his father had for him.
Yeah, disdain. And you know, every morning the question had to be, Mildred, are you sure he's mine?
I know all the tests say he is. But
I know you've told me that. I've actually never seen the test, and he really doesn't look like me. Come on, we've been married 63 years. You can tell.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. On his deathbed, he probably said, I know you're not mine. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, nothing would surprise. It was, I mean, I've never seen a more, and then it was there was another thing of the portal. Remember the company. So the one side of the company was all conservative, absolutely traditional. It looked like you just walked into 1963. Then you go through the door into the other side where you were.
Yeah.
And now you're in like Star Trek. It's like modern day.
Yeah. He wanted, there had to be a wall there. And it was to keep the two worlds from colliding.
I have no doubt his dad required that. Look, we can do this, but I want a wall with a door that locks from my side.
Yes. Well, I mean, to be honest, the father-son, the stark difference between the two is kind of like the first place we were at, too.
Well, that was done. I was just thinking the exact same thing. It's interesting to me that we had two of the father-son experiences.
Yeah.
And the first one was a father-son and another son.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was just
he's easy
high
to forget,
all the time.
But he was there.
Yeah. And he's running the place now, I think.
Well, what's left?
I don't even know, to be honest. It's been here.
I think you could fit most of it in a shoebox today. I'm sorry, did I say that too quickly? It was...
you were probably overstating it.
All I will say without tipping our hand is that it's a shadow of what it once was. I don't even know if the retail locations are still there.
If there are,
there might be a few, but not
fewer.
All. Yeah, but that was another interesting father-son dynamic.
I know the one I managed is way gone.
The
building's there, but it's traded hands multiple times since then.
So you had much more interaction with the senior member.
Oh, yeah. I took his stuff over.
Yeah, and I was only interacted with him a few times, and I always had a great respect for him. Really looked up to him, hung on every word he said. I really liked him.
Yes.
But he said something once that I thought was absolutely hilarious and chilling at the same point. So I ran into him many years later, and I had been gone, and I see him. Hey, sir, how you doing? It's good to see you. And I said, how's everything going? How's the family? I'm just trying to be polite.
Yeah.
And it's a little awkward because this is a guy that I greatly respect. You know, you look up to him.
He deserved it.
You couldn't help but respect it. He was an amazing guy. And this is a guy who started a company by selling stuff out of the trunk of his car, grew it into a multi-million, if not billion-dollar operation. Yes.
And his wife as well.
Yeah. And his kids and other people's kids. And he was a very kind, smart guy. Long since gone. We're at a funeral. I believe it was a funeral. And I know it was a funeral. That's the only place I would go where I'd see somebody I knew. And I'm just trying to make small talk. How's everything going? And he goes, well, and he had this very quiet demeanor. You know what I mean? And it was kind of a dry humor with a punch.
No, he was gentle in a lot of ways, unless he crossed them, and then
or if someone else irritated him, because this one was like, I'm like, so how's everything going? This is a, I'm paraphrasing a little, but this is precisely what he said. Well, I don't know. My son asked me for a multi-million-dollar loan to save the company I built. Have you ever asked your dad for that? I'm like, no, can't say that I have. Yeah, yeah, didn't think so. Some people would be okay with it. Others not.
Just matter of fact.
I think the best part was, you know, some people would be okay with it, others not. And that was his demeanor. It was very, you know, there'd be like a pearl of wisdom wrapped in this one sentence. He was
grave,
a really good summer.
Grave
upper.
Sadness.
Yeah, grave sadness, and there was nothing you could say after that other than, well, it was really good to see you, sir, and then you walk away.
Yeah. Yeah. Bob looks really good. Looks really, really good in the coffin there.
Yeah, he looks great. Better than I've ever seen him. Well, I think I'm going to go and see if they have something to drink.
Yeah, I'm going to go do anything else, though. No, he was a good guy.
He was a really good guy, and I think he was one of those guys that you learned a lot from. And, you know, I really enjoyed talking to him. I mean, he was kind of one of those guys that didn't say a lot, but what he did say mattered.
Yeah, it was valued. I spent time on the road with him. And
yeah,
the people that we went and saw, I mean, the respect was genuine, earned, and it was both ways.
Yeah, you know? No question. That was back when people bought from people, more so
than
any other time. There's still some of that, but, I mean, then it was a real relationship business. You know, which actually kind of rolls us into our next, probably our final subject for today, is travel. We touched on it. You and I have traveled most of our careers, good, bad, and ugly. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's become a new level of stupid. And
well,
I'm sorry, but there's no other word for it. I mean, it's kind of like what we were talking about before is, you know, they announce it at the Delta, you know, we both fly Delta.
Yeah,
you're sitting there at the terminal, and it's like, all right, all Diamonds and Delta 360 members can board. Everybody except one guy stands up.
Nearly. At any hub anymore.
At any hub. Topeka, Kansas. I mean, it doesn't matter where you are. There's no point in the status anymore.
No. No, and... It's not special to travel anymore. During COVID,
other
it
than
was great.
People, how they, you know, I mean, people still, you know, the attire makes it special, right?
You mean grown men in pajama bottoms carrying a pillow?
Yeah,
a little hard.
Pokemon with Pokemon headsets in a Lunchable in their hand, so that they have a snack on the plane. They look like they're getting ready for nap time.
The next hour and a half.
Yeah. Or the guy that comes on the plane carrying a build-your-own fajita kit from Chili's in the airport. Why would you sell something like that in an airport?
To irritate the entire plane?
And then, you know, the next thing is like, or any thought process whatsoever. This is an hour and 20-minute flight, and you can't make it through it without stuffing your gullet with
God forbid they don't have something to do. I mean, just sit still for a few minutes. Be alone in your own thoughts.
And I don't, I don't want to be that old curmudgeon dinosaur guy. I'm not trying to be that, but it's like, come on, folks, put a little effort into it. I mean, I'm not saying you have to wear a three-piece suit, but you could brush your teeth and comb your hair. Just saying.
It would be nice. It would be nice if people just got on the plane, sat down, shut up. And
or shoes.
Left.
Shoes would be nice. I think shoes should be a requirement.
I think men should never be without shoes.
Men should never be without shoes unless you're on a beach. And the other thing I think is that, you know, nobody wants to see somebody's hoof on a plane. So put a shoe on. You know, you're going to thank us because it gets cold, usually right after takeoff. And these are the same people that are ringing the bell going, do you have a blanket? Well, had you wore something besides a tank top and shorts, flip-flops, you probably wouldn't need the blanket. There's a reason you saw World War II fighter pilots wear leather jackets. It's because it gets cold up there.
Yeah, not just because they want to look cool.
No, that came later.
Yeah. That's why they call that cool, no. No,
yeah.
I think the combination of that, not just the flight, but the airport themselves, I mean, I'm struggling to go through. All I want to do is
TSA.
Get point B, and there's people laying down in the hallway because they got, you know, an hour between flights and they need to sleep in the hall, in the aisle.
Well, or the other one is they booked it on one of these third-party sites that ran them through three different airlines with a nine-hour layover in one of their legs. But the good news is they saved $27.
Yeah,
and only one of the airlines didn't recognize their ticket because that's the next one. And you must run into the same thing. I think at least once a week, I'm standing at a hotel counter listening to some guy argue with the desk about they made a reservation on this third party out of country discount site.
Prepaid.
The property cannot find the reservation.
Yeah.
Shocker. I don't know when people are going to learn that, you know, you're going to save yourself a lot of headaches if you just book directly with the property. I mean, if I was to give anybody any travel advice, book directly with the airline, whoever you prefer. And, you know, I mentioned it earlier, I fly Delta.
Yeah.
Part of what dictates what you fly is where you live.
Right.
You know, if you fly out of South Florida or you know, Michigan, you're probably going to fly Delta. If you fly out of Texas, you're going to fly American. If you fly out of Charlotte, you're going to fly, you know,
United.
So it's just, you know, Chicago, United. But then the next thing is book your travel direct and book your hotel direct. You know, hey, you might pay $6 more, but you're going to have a room when you get there.
Just kind of the whole reason. The book and the
it really is.
Yeah,
which is the other one?
There and see what sign you see.
Yeah, which is the other travel trip I would throw out there is it's not necessary to cook fajitas again in your hotel room because the rest of us don't want to smell it.
Well, it's not fajitas anymore. It's weed.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. You know, the reefer's pretty heavy on the fourth floor, especially if you're traveling on a Friday night or Saturday night.
Oh, you can tell which room and you know what elevator they got into.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave's not home. And then the last one is bringing your Great Dane with you that's your emotional support dog. And he proceeds to bark at every noise that walks down the hallway all night long.
Yeah. Well, if they're not in the plane, they're in the room.
Well, and that's the other one. You know, if you can't pick the dog up, he shouldn't be able to go on the plane. And I don't mean you find the strongest guy in the airport and he can pick up your 90-pound Great Dane. I mean, if you can't pick up a dog with one hand and tuck him under your arm, he really shouldn't be going on the plane.
Sorry, but I don't even think those should be.
Oh, some of it's hilarious. It's a little bit of amusement. You got to admit. I mean, I've got a little dog. He's got more air miles than most people. He's also better behaved. You know what's sad? He is actually better trained than the people. He gets in line, doesn't cause a fuss, walks down the aisle, hops up in the seat that we're going to, waits for me to throw the bag overhead, and you never hear a peep out of her.
All right, well, I've never traveled with you in that regard because I would have mercifully destroyed everything about that. Well, you just said.
I will let you. You can take Parker with you on a trip, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I'm sorry to say that Parker didn't make it. I don't know what to say.
You ran away at the airport.
Yeah.
It was left. Last time I saw him, he was tied to the arm of the terminal.
I'm sure it was Atlanta. I forget what airport, but it was probably Atlanta.
Yeah, the sad part is he would figure it out, and when you got to the hotel, he'd be sitting on the bed.
Well, you give him a lot more credit than any dog I've ever met.
But I got to tell you, the thing is, it's like, come on, there has to be a limit. I like these people that bring on, 120-pound dog and, it's fine. Cujo is, he hardly ever bites anybody.
Yeah. No, I'm not interested in farm animals on vehicles or in air travel or in the airport or in hotels.
Which takes us to the last leg, the rental car.
See, I've shielded myself from all this just for years of not wanting to deal with the roops. You join all the club, and you just walk out. You grab a car, and you leave. You don't stand at any counter. I don't go to the hotel counter anymore.
No, do everything mobile key. Other than the fact that what I've run into in the last 6 months is, I think probably 3 out of 5 times I get up to the room and the mobile key doesn't. So then you got to make the trip back down to find out what's going on. Oh, I don't know. Here's a regular one. Thanks. This is terrific.
Yeah, I just recently went to the app for the boarding pass too.
I've done that.
It's up to me.
And then you get the other one I would throw out there to people is you have to grab Clear. So Clear is worth its weight in gold. Don't
all of
TSA pre-check. Is a must, but Clear is, they should, I think they do sell those together, but that should be a given that you do those two together because you will thank yourself for doing it.
I went one step further. Now I'm doing the digital ID with Delta.
I do that
as
well.
It's so much faster than Clear, but regardless, my attitude on travel is interact with as few number of people as possible.
And if I can not stop walking from the time I get off the shuttle until I get to the gate, it's been a pretty good day.
I've timed it where I leave my house, where I can slow down as I walk through security, but I do not stop. And I'm usually boarding within a minute or two of me showing up at the gate.
Well, let's put it in perspective, though. You fly out of an airport that's also a hair care and tire center.
I can get my tires rotated and my
pick up milk. They don't even need a loudspeaker. The guy just kind of yells down the hall, "Hey, plane number 4 is boarding."
Yeah. And you notice that where I live now, I did the exact same thing in the previous one and the one before that because there is a close, generically close, large hub airport. But
true.
I choose
that's
to fly
the
out of the little one. Yeah, I choose to fly out of the little one so that I can park within 1,000 feet of the door and walk from my car directly onto the airplane.
I've I go because I go the way that you used to. And it's like I've become an airline snob where I want to park within a couple of feet of the shuttle bus. And then they drop me off at the bottom of the escalator, and I walk right into the Delta terminal.
Yeah, I don't even do that. I don't take the shuttle anymore.
I can't
I'll
do
pay
the smaller.
I'll pay the more for the for the privilege of not having to deal with the shuttle guys.
Oh, I don't mind. Those guys, I would much rather do that than the shucks, you know.
I'm not talking about the driver. I'm talking about the groups who are carrying their life collection of luggage.
Oh, yeah. Of course, that's the same crew on the plane that, you know, they don't want to check anything, but yet they're going to, and I don't get me wrong, in a lot of trips I don't check anything either, other than the fact I make sure my bags are the same ones I used when I was a pilot. They will fit in any airplane. If it doesn't fit in the bag, it doesn't go. Rather than these people that drag on a trunk and then fight it for 20 minutes because it will not fit.
No, I'm carry-on only. I did Europe for a week with a carry-on.
Yeah.
And I didn't wear the same thing every day. I pack well. I also don't take shit besides the pharmacy. I don't take shit I don't need.
No, they have it there.
Exactly.
That's the other one is I don't understand the people that bring the pharmacy and the Walgreens with them. You do realize they have this on the other end. And if your hair is going to fall out because you use a different shampoo for 2 days, you might want to see
something wrong with you.
Yeah, it's way more than the shampoo. You really need to get some medical attention, and I would suggest it's at the university level.
Yeah, because this is a case study.
No question. Well, I appreciate you joining us today. We're up at the top of the hour, so we're going to have to call it a day for today, but we would definitely love to do this again. This has been a fireside chat with my very good friend, Bryce. We hope you enjoyed it. We enjoyed it, and we'll be back again soon. We're brought to you today by Ballyrose Farm, ballyrose.com, the Palm Restaurant, Miami, and we would love to plug Hilton and Delta if they would ever want to be on this show. There you go. There's the teaser. All right, folks. Hey, there's a new movie coming out that I have to plug. It's called Saturday Night, and it's basically the history of Saturday Night Live. I would encourage everybody to get out and see it. It debuts right now, so it should be coming out in secondary markets this week. Thanks for joining us. This has been a Fireside Chat, and we'll see you again next week.